The TCG Design Theory Podcast is part of the Booster Pack Network. For more TCG-related content, visit theboosterpacknetwork.com. All right, everybody, welcome to the TCG Design Theory Podcast. My name is Jay, and today we have Justin Parnell, who is the Organized Play Manager for North America Equinox. So, Justin, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jay. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so a lot of our episodes kind of have revolved around more of the design of specifically the trading card game and things like that. But it's good to get into some of the operational logistics and those types of things. So really excited to talk about this. But before we begin, can you kind of run us through a little bit about how you got started in the TCG space and the tabletop space in general?
Absolutely. I've been into tabletop games my entire life. So as long as I can remember, not just, you know, things like Monopoly or Scrabble. I have, you know, old board games from the 90s still on my shelf back here. And I really started to get into TCGs in 1998. The first one that I personally played was the original Star Wars TCG. Not the, you know, but I think we've had about five since then. The one from Decipher. And then moved on to Pokemon and then got into Magic in 1999. And have been playing Magic Strong for 25 years. I've played about a dozen other TCGs probably along the way, but I've been as a fan and a player for, you know, the vast majority of my life into this space, specifically in TCGs. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, obviously being a fan of trading card games and things like that, what kind of nudged you in the direction of wanting to have a career in this type of space?
Right. So, you know, it was primarily focused on Magic. And honestly, that is where most of my experience and, you know, love for this industry has come from. And professionally, I moved over to the, you know, not just a fan side, but working in its side. In 2013, I started to work for Star City Games. I ended up being there for 10 years. I was the purchasing manager, primarily focused on inventory acquisition and management, but I was also part of the admin team that put on all of our SCG Tour, SCG Con. We've had so many names over the years. All of those events for an extended period of time.
Okay. And so you would say that that's primarily the experience that you're drawing upon for like organized play and things like that.
Right. You know, as someone that has been a part as a player of many, many organized play systems, seeing things come and go, seeing things that worked and didn't work, and then being a part of that from the tournament organizer side, not necessarily as the kind of developer and publisher side, which is where I am now, but from the tournament organizer retailer side, significant amount of experience there and seeing how those systems can work and how sometimes they can fail.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with that, you know, a lot of things that people tend to talk about when it comes to, you know, trading card games and stuff in general about the longevity of those types of games is, you know, how is the organized play? Is there a good community? Is there support for, you know, local game stores and things like that? But in your opinion, with the games that you've played and, you know, obviously working on a project that's, you know, very successful right now, that being Altered TCG, kind of walk me through, is it completely necessary for a trading card game to have organized play?
Is it necessary? No, it's not necessary. But I would say that it's really, really important for your communication to be clear from the developer. And as long as you are clear of what level of organized play you're going to have, and that could be none, I think that can work fine. You know, players and retailers really just need to know what they're getting into when they dive into a game from a financial standpoint. How is that going to be supported from the development end to the other two kind of core user groups, which are players and retailers? You're likely, you know, kind of capping your stake in the market by opting to not expand it to an area that has high demand. But as long as you manage expectations and communicate honestly and clearly, from what your involvement is as a developer, then it can be acceptable and doable.
Mm-hmm. And so where do we draw the line between, you know, designer and publisher supported organized play, and just kind of encouraged organized play at a fan level. You know, where does that transition happen?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And a lot of games that don't have kind of official organized play really want to support organized play efforts from outside of the sphere of the publisher. And, you know, you see this happen a lot. Oh, actually, you know what? I talked about Star Wars TCG that was from the 90s, right? So that game died in early 2000s. But events continued from fans for years, maybe decades even. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're still going. And, you know, the various publishers that have owned that license have encouraged that to continue. So what you really have is kind of a difference in saying, we are going to actively support this effort as a developer to construct these systems for organized plays to function. Now, that could be through very small level, as in, you know, at the LGS level, local game store level, or that could be through convention level or higher. You know, you have your professional circuit, perhaps. Then on the other side, you could just say, well, you know, we're not going to be supporting any specific organized play, but we encourage you to, and we will, you know, promote your efforts to do so. Maybe we're going to put listings on our website. Maybe there's an event finder, but it's all done through fans and people that are not being compensated in any way or form to do that. There's no prizing that is being distributed from the developer to the people that are running the tournaments. And that, to me, that is where the O in organized play comes in. Organized, and that, as far as I'm concerned, has to do with official organization from the developer. And if you don't have that capital O in organized, then you don't have OP in the traditional sense. Doesn't mean that your game can't have events, but it does take a slightly different form when the developer and publisher are involved.
Mm-hmm. And with organized play, so personally, I've only heard, not only, but mostly heard of organized play when it comes to trading card games and games like that, where there's this expectation of expansion and moving forward. Right. And of course, there's other game models that expand without the collectible aspect of it. Would you say there's any difference between those two things in terms of organized play at, you know, whatever level, between collectible games and non-collectible games?
Right. So if we're asking about like TCGs compared to like CCGs, so TCGs being trading card games, CCGs being collectible card games, and LCGs being living card games, I believe is the term that Fantasy Flight has coined through their various efforts doing that. In between that kind of group, it doesn't need to change a whole lot. You know, it's tough to have the breadth of organized play as a non-TCG due to how CCGs and LCGs work at retail. But if the game is strong and popular, it doesn't necessarily need to be any difference. Again, it's more about expectation managing. And for more traditional hobby games, like, you know, board games that you find at your local game store, it's difficult to institute more formal organized play because things aren't changing. You know, you have so one of my favorite games is, which I think is a lot of people's, is Terraforming Mars, you know, one of my favorite board games, right? And Terraforming Mars has half a dozen expansions. And you can opt into playing the expansion, you cannot play the expansion. But ultimately, if you're looking at the base level game of Terraforming Mars, it stayed the same for the better part of a decade since it's released. It's kind of just what the game is. Strategies kind of might evolve as people, you know, that at a high level that are playing the game have a better understanding. But ultimately, if you look at a Terraforming Mars event, a competitive event that's happening at Gen Con in 2018, and you look at one that happened in 2013, it'll look very similar, right? Whereas TCGs, quite different in a 5-year span, could look, you know, if you take something like Magic the Gathering, could look entirely different in a 5-year span. So it's really just about knowing what you're getting into as a player and a tournament organizer of what is going to be the draw to keep people coming back to this space from an organized play perspective.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hear a lot of comments about, the competitive players and the players who are, you know, spending X amount of dollars on these competitive decks are the ones keeping the game alive. And then I hear people saying, well, you know, there's a bigger casual drive that keeps these games right. alive. In your experience, how do both of those audiences kind of play into the economy of a game? And, how do you work that in with organized play, with those hyper-competitive right. players, also knowing that people are going to be introduced to the game and may face some of those, types of players?
Well, absolutely. And I love that question because something that I think people that are the, not necessarily competitive people, that people that are kind of in that 1% of investment for a game, they usually look at the other people that are in that 1%, right? Whether that's online at their local store, social media, and they say, oh, this is the largest represented group for this game. And that's what they say. And I mean, I can tell you as a retailer of having been a retailer of the largest independent Magic the Gathering store for 10 years, the casual base that is not a part of that 1%, that doesn't necessarily, have a huge, following online and isn't involved in every conversation, they dwarf any other group. It's not even in the neighborhood of being close. But to kind of get back to your question at large, so how do you manage that between organized play for both groups? Well, a lot of people kind of in that 1% group look at organized play and they think competitive play, right? They think tournaments, and maybe that means isolated tournaments. Maybe that means a progression or like qualifier system. Maybe it means the highest level of professional play for games that have that. But to me, that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. Organized play simply just means a way that the developer, and usually in conjunction, often with retailers, so local game stores or places perhaps that run events regularly. You could have a game cafe that has a Monday night Pokemon night, or a library that has Pokemon night once a week, right? And as long as that's supported from the developer, that's organized play. Those are not going to be competitive. But it's a place for people to be able to come that's part of the official system and saying, yeah, this is supported by whatever the developer for this game is organized play. But a lot of people that are kind of in that larger group that are focused on OP as being competitive play, they don't kind of view it like that. But those types of programs are critically important because that second group, that kind of silent majority that is not invested in the game from the highest level, and they're not talking about it every single day on social media, it's not dominating their lives, they're maybe treating it like more like a board game night. Once a week, they go to this place, they play in this event for a couple hours, they're not so worried about winning and losing or keeping up with all of the latest things that are happening in the metagame, but it's a place for them to go and interact with people that are like-minded, that just want to be able to play the game and maybe get a cool promo card or something. That's OP. Those are both OP. OP can exist at the highest level where you're trying to crown a world champion. It can exist at a low level of someone that doesn't even know what the different formats of your game are. They simply just have cards, have a deck, and they want to be able to engage with that with people that are in the same group. So it's tough to manage both of those, but it also is important to identify both of those groups, because if you don't, you will lose them. I mean, straight up, if you look at the players that are playing your game and invest in your game and your brand, and you say, you know what, we're not going to worry about this group, well, over time, it will be difficult for you to continue to have that group be invested in your game, especially for a TCG, because kind of the nature of TCGs is you have expansions coming out every 3, 4, 5, 6 months, right? Well, in that 6-month period, or over maybe over a year, you stop supporting one of that groups. Well, maybe they're not so keen to pick up you know, whatever the latest expansion is, or be as invested in the community. And that's something that, you know, you can kind of erode away your player base by not taking care of all of the different angles. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to serve everyone to the degree they want, because you often never will. You know, if you play TCGs, so, you know, it's, we always want more than we're going to be able to get, and that's okay. It's okay to ask, but, you know, just as long as those players are served and those groups are served in some way, that's the draw for them to come back.
Right. And I'm really happy that you made that distinction with organized play between, you know, these high-level events and, you know, these casual-level events, because, you know, I get into the bad habit of it too. When I hear organized play, the first thing I think of is tournament, right?
Right.
You're buying in, you're trying to when you're playing somewhat competitively, right? But yeah, completely disregarding the casual side of it, which, you know, I've been to more than my fair share of cafe board game nights and things like that. And absolutely have seen people playing, you know, Magic and Pokemon and, you know, all types of stuff. So, you know, it really is just kind of a spectrum of, you know, from casual to competitive, what organized play can do. And, you know, there's the obvious benefits, which, you know, it kind of gets more engagement with your, you know, your fans and your players. But what are some of the other benefits of organized play at any level? You know, we can start with casual and go to competitive, but what does it do for, you know, a designer and a publisher of a trading card game to have solid organized play?
All right. Well, I mean, I'm obviously biased on this question.
But, I hope so.
But several. I think the first is, and maybe the biggest one, is confidence. You know, organized play is the developer saying they're invested in the future of this game. Because organized play is not just a singular instance. It's a system that you're creating. It speaks to the players and the retailers, because OP ultimately is marketing where they can see where the dollars are going. You can actually see how that developer or publisher is invested in the system that is going to grow the brand. So that is a huge one. And just saying confidence, saying, hey, look, if you can come to this event and we want you to come to this event, this is what we're going to do to incentivize you to do so. And that is if it's done well, it's a win-win-win for everyone. The second is retailer support. And this is, in my opinion, super critical. But I think having in-store organized play systems that directly benefit retailers create a symbiotic relationship directly with the developer. And the third, the third is just allowing for natural community creation, not something that, you know, you are trying to manufacture as a developer, but saying, hey, this is a space where you can come and be engaged in this community and kind of create your own community. And, you know, having OP systems for TCGs allows for a very natural community fostering. This can be, like we talked about, at LGSs. This could be at board game cafes. This could be at regional conventions. This could be at large competitive tournaments at the highest level. But because of the constantly rotating nature of TCGs with new releases, they're able to benefit more from OP than all of the other, if not every other, physical card and board game, really. Because there's always a driver to re-engage with the community when something new happens, which is frequent. So I think, you know, it takes a lot of effort, because it's anything that is kind of marketing. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm, you know, organized play manager for North America, but I'm part of the marketing department, right? And the organized play manager for Europe, part of the marketing department. So that's what it is. But marketing doesn't have to be a dirty word if it's something that we say, you know, this is how we are wanting to engage you, because we want you to be excited about playing our game. And here's what we can do to engage you to do that. And if it's communicated clearly and it's done well, all three groups, and I think that there are three major groups when you're talking about organized play. There's the developer, of course, there's the players, but there's also the retailers. And I think if it's communicated clearly and done well, all three of those groups can benefit.
Yeah. And I've seen it, you know, I've talked to my fair share of, you know, LGS owners and things like that. And, you know, heard their stories about, you know, Magic or Pokemon or whatever their kind of support that they're getting, or stipulations that are required by those developers for organized play and things. And it's always interesting to hear the differences there. But I'm glad you also, you know, mentioned that marketing is not a, it's not this taboo word that is like, ooh, you know, it's like spooky and, you know, trying to get you to buy something. Right. Marketing is simply the act of, hey, we have this thing and we want to let you know about it.
Right.
And exactly. So organized play is a perfect way to do that. You are much more likely to have a memorable moment playing with somebody or talking about, not even playing, honestly, you can talk about a card game.
Just engaging.
Yeah.
Just engaging in the community.
Right. In person than you would online, because you're putting a voice, a face, and a time and a feeling to the situation. So, it's critical, hugely important. And I agree, which, you know, leads me weirdly to this next question, which is, in your opinion, in your very biased opinion, is right. there anything that organized play can do that would actually harm a game, in your opinion, that you've seen?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's fair. Okay. So I think that there are two things. The first is simple. Broken promises from the developer, right? That's obvious. But in my opinion, it matters more for organized play than retail products because, again, OP is about creating systems for the community to interact together. The retail product is just saying, hey, we're going to sell you this as the, you know, first starts at the developer, then moves to the distributor, then to the retailer, then to the consumer. That's a, you know, the product itself is isolated, but organized play is a product that's not isolated. So if you say, hey, we're going to do this, and we want you to invest in the system and you don't do it. Okay. Well, that's, that creates a lot of, discomfort, I'll say with your other two kind of, core consumer groups of retailers and customers. So I think that's an obvious one. The second one, and this is tougher. This has been a fail point for a lot of games is creating a system that is unsustainable for one of those three parties. That's either the developer, the player, or the tournament organizer slash retailer. A lot of times the TO is the retailer. The tournament organizer and a retailer often are side by side because for, you know, for local level organized play, you're doing that in a local game store, right? So, but I'll say TO for tournament organizer. So if it's unsustainable for one of those three parties, and usually by sustainable, I mean financially sustainable. If the system isn't suited financially to all of those groups, you risk doing harm to your brand and the game. And for new games, especially ones with no IPs attached, I mean, like Altered, we are working with our own IP. We're not working with an IP that is, you know, we are attached to. That can be tough or impossible to come back from. Because basically, if you create a system where any of those groups say, hey, I can't keep up with this. Like it's too much money. I'm not being able to make enough back, or I don't feel like I'm getting enough back. For retailers, because it's a business for them, if they have to put, you know, their own money in whatever form that takes into running organized play events, well, that those aren't going to exist for a long time. If it's too costly for players to engage in those, whether it's by travel or the frequently that they are feel like they are required to play in organized play events, also can be harmful. And for the developer, well, if you make your organized play reward so robust, you're actually losing money on it. Well, I mean, that one's obvious. You're the one that makes the game. So that can't, that's only so long that can happen.
Mm-hmm. And I've had conversations where, LGS owners have talked about, not necessarily getting that consistent organized play price support and things like that. And then, you know, kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, footing the bill, mm-hmm. you know, to keep players engaged and things like that. And from an OP perspective, or I should say a developer's perspective, how important is it to, you know, offer that prize support and take as much burden off of the LGS owners as you can?
Well, it has to be equitable for both sides. You know, It's difficult for one side to expect the other side to do all of the work. It puts a lot of stress on the developer, usually in ways they're not able to respond to. If a retailer is saying, well, you need to provide me with everything. You need to provide all of the prizes. You need to provide all of the marketing. I simply just have it in my store and I'm not doing any of the work. Okay, well, that's not something that's going to be successful for either side. And same on the other way. It's like, okay, if the retailer's saying, okay, I am doing all of the work in creating drivers for players to come to my stores, but I'm buying product and supplying it as prize support or I am creating a larger tournament system for your game and there's no assistance from the developer, that's also not going to work out long term. So it has to be both. To have a successful, long-lasting relationship for a game, is the developer has to be able to provide something, and oftentimes that's in the way of price support and marketing. Maybe driving, maybe creating a system that drives players to your stores. So saying, okay, we have this. Maybe it could be a tournament series. There's qualifiers going on, and we're going to tell you where these qualifiers are and tell you this is where you need to go. And this store is in particular one of those. But on the store hand, you need to be able to make sure that you are creating an environment that's positive enough for players to want to play in your events. A lot of organized play happens kind of in the constraints, loosely in the constraints of the system that's been created for a game. So I look at this as a store might, we'll just use Magic as an example, because this is, been around the longest. I think people are the most familiar with it. FNM is kind of an institution in the TCG world. It happens on one day. You're going to get consistent rewards as a player, and it's supported from the developer level to the retailer level. Is that the only Magic tournament that goes on in stores? Absolutely not. Most events that happen in retailers are not events that are specifically supported by Wizards of the Coast, but it allows them to operate in their system previously with being, an official event that we had to put into your DCI number, now going through the companion app, which is an official, Wizards kind of low, small scale organized play manager for the tournament organizer. But those are created by the retailer or the tournament organizer to say, hey, we're going to create this event or maybe event series that happens every week. It's not FNM. It's not, it's not a pre-release, but it's something else where a player can come and participate, and we're going to be providing all of the rewards, and we're going to, get all of the benefits of players coming to our store, whether that is, paying money for entry, whether that's encouraging them to buy singles or other products in their store, et cetera, building a community. So both of those things have to happen, because you have to allow for stores to do that. And especially in the United States. And my experience, we're trying to create a global game with Altered. And my experience is in how it works in the United States, and I guess the English speaking parts of Canada, so to speak. And, I know that's how it works. That's how it's always worked. You're going to have retailers that are going to want to create their own events and run their own events. And I think that that's wonderful. I think that that is extremely helpful to everyone if those can be done successfully. But you need to make sure that you create a system to allow for that, where tournament organizers don't feel like they have to kind of go out of bounds to create something that's attractive for their community.
Mm-hmm. And talking about with... setting up a system where everybody can kind of succeed, and you're always going to have kind of unofficial events being run. Even if you have a very robust organized play structure, you're always going to have those people kind of running their own tournaments and things like that. So there's obviously a lot of things that go into organized play. It can be a very big thing. As we discussed before, it can be very casual. It can be very competitive. So with that in mind, with organized play, where in the process of creating and designing a trading card game should people even begin to start thinking about this? And of course, I'm not talking about just tournaments, but even just, not so much like, oh, we're getting together to play test the game, but I'm ready to kind of tell people, hey, I'm ready to go to an LGS, right? And I'm ready to say, hey, you like trading card games? I'm working on one. And you're kind of doing that little bit of self-marketing. When do those first steps start coming in?
That's a great question. It's a tough one. It's a tough question to answer. I mean, I think one of the very specific answers to this question is to when you start thinking about it is immediately, because it might adjust your design, and that doesn't necessarily mean you need to create systems right off the bat, but have in your mind, am I going to have organized play for this game or not could affect your design, because OP can have an effect on development from a rules perspective. You know, if you have a game that, you know, we've probably all played board games that the rule books are loose. I'll just put it that way. Maybe you have to fill in the blanks sometimes. Well, for organized play, those are the type of things that create friction the easiest, is if you don't have rules clear with how your game operates. Because organized play inherently is asking a player to say, I like this game so much, I want to go outside of my comfort zone, to go to a location that's not my home, to play against another person that I've never met before, and we're going to enter into this agreement that we're going to be playing the game by the same rules. If you're playing, I'll use Terraforming Mars again, if you're playing Terraforming Mars in your dining room, you and your friends can interact with that however you want. You can go by the rule book if you want to make your own rules. Everyone's on the same page. It doesn't really matter. But for organized play in public spaces, the rules have to be solid to where there is no friction between two people that don't know each other that want to play the game. So on that basis, you have to at least have an idea of a yes or no. Maybe not necessarily the system, but yes or no, do you want to support it? Because if the answer is yes, you need to think about that from a rules perspective and not create the game in a way that makes it very, very difficult to answer those questions by the time you get to it. So that's kind of part one of my answer. Part two is identifying, like, who are you trying to serve here? Like, who do you think that your player base is going to be? And you don't always know that when you're kind of starting down the design path of creating a TCG. And I would say when you figure that out, when you say, hey, I think this is going to be the group that's going to be the most, the most engaged with the product that I'm making, that's probably when you start to say, okay, well, now is organized play something that I want to try to support, or is it going to be something that players are going to expect that I'm supporting? And then I think that's when that conversation should start happening.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good point. That's because I've always kind of assumed that with trading card games, you have you're just naturally going to have both, but there definitely is you can start gearing that towards whatever experience you want as a designer and developer, kind of seeing which group is going to be a little bit more of your focus up front. So not just with organized play, but obviously we talk about it pretty simply in terms of, oh yeah, we just set these things up and Friday night magic and all this stuff. But there's obviously a lot of logistics that go into these types of things. It can be simple, like at a board game cafe or at a LGS, and just kind of doing a consistent game night. But let's talk about some of the things with, kind of just events in general. Like, what are some of the things that go into setting up events? How do you, who are you calling? Where are you looking to see where to host events and where to do these things? Like, what are some of those first steps to take care of that stuff?
Right. Well, I mean, the first step of all is you need to identify your goals. What is your goal for creating this? What type of players are you trying to attract? Are the players you expect to participate heavily in organized play the same players that are the target market for the game? Is your organized play system attractive to retailers and tournament organizers? It's better to ask yourself one too many of those questions than one too few. And that goes into, if let's say you're trying to set up like a regional tournament, we'll use that as an example that, you brought up as far as like location. Well, have you talked to retailers that are in that local area to understand their communities and how their communities interact with your game? So I think that if you start going down this path and you don't stop and say, have I asked all the questions, and you just blaze right past that, the chances are very good that you have not asked all of the questions, and you're going to make it more difficult for yourself to create an event, like a physical event, that doesn't work. That doesn't necessarily mean that it won't go off, that the event won't happen, but there's a world of difference in a well-run event and a poorly run event. And usually the poorly run events just haven't asked themselves enough questions. So without getting into specifics, I will just say that. I think that is really the way to make sure that you are not shooting yourself in the foot is to make sure that you are asking all of the questions and stopping and saying, have I asked all the questions? And the answer is probably no. Mm-hmm. Keep asking more.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Being kind of like an operations manager kind of in, you know, my career, thinking ahead and planning for all those like ABC scenarios is definitely important. And, you know, I think a lot of people get a little nervous when it comes to that, you know, because you are having to set up and organize this. You know, it is like anything else that is being organized. You're having to plan things and set times and all that stuff. But, you know, with so much effort that goes into, you know, a lot of these organized events, and aside from like prize support and things like that, what are some other incentives or other ways that developers can get people to want to come out? As you said, you know, it's people getting out of their comfort zone, playing against a stranger, which can be very daunting. So what are some other ways to incentivize that?
Yeah, I mean, well, as you said, you know, there's a lot of different ways to incentivize at different levels. I think rewards is a big one. So I don't want to just blaze past that, because rewards doesn't necessarily need to be, it doesn't need to be like a, you know, like a card, right, that you're getting. It doesn't necessarily need to be that. But it could be that. It could be a participation reward that is saying, hey, just come and play in our event. Doesn't matter if you win, doesn't matter if you lose. We're going to reward you for participating. It could be something that is maybe a season long, you know, from one point to another point that rewards you based on repeated play. Or, and I think getting more to kind of the specifics of your question, the driver or the reward could be a unique experience. You could be able to play in a way that you interact with this game that you wouldn't be able to do at home with your friends. Those are some of my favorite type of events at large TCG conventions that I've gone to, are the ones that's like, oh, this is a very cool event that I wouldn't have a chance to play in normally. And those are the things, that could be at a large convention, that could be at your local game store, but basically creating an event that you're not able to access on your own as a player, those are some of the best things that you can do to incentivize participation in your organized play system. Do something where players can't just do the same thing at their house with their buddies, right? You want to say, hey, you need to come here to this place to participate in this event that's happening, and you will be rewarded in some way. Whether that, again, that could be physical card rewards, it could be something that's leading up to something else, like a season-long reward, or again, an experience. But I think it needs to be something like that. It needs to be something that is different than they can do on their own.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've hit on a lot of great points in terms of how to do organized play properly and things like that, the benefits of organized play. But let's kind of sum up some of your tips for someone who has no experience, has never been to an organized play event, has never thought about it or anything like that, but thinks about, okay, well, maybe I should start taking these steps. Let's summarize what you think some of the main focus points need to be, so they're not wasting their efforts and really, you know, succeeding at creating a good experience.
Right. So this would be for like a new someone that's like developing a TCG or kind of creating this. Okay. Well, I'll start by saying that Equinox is new. You know, we our Altered is launching August 26th. So we're new, we're in the same boat. So I'll give you kind of what we're thinking, what I'm thinking. I'm going to narrow it down to one tip that I'll talk about a little bit. And that is to be humble. Be a student of the genre. This TCGs have existed for 31 years now. Magic the Gathering released in 1993. There's hundreds of TCGs that have come and gone in that amount of time, and even come and gone in the 25 years since I've been involved and kind of in this world. And it's a combination of, you know, what is the phrase? If you're not, if you don't, you know, learn about the past, you're doomed to repeat the mistakes, something like that. I mean, that's a big one. Everyone wants to try something new and innovate. And I think that's necessary. That's the only way that TCGs as a genre will continue to exist, is by innovation and people trying to do things new. But there are also certain areas where you don't want to try to reinvent the wheel, because it might not roll the way that you expect it to if you do that. And I would just say, why are you, first of all, why are you making a new TCG? Is there something that is a draw to you that is different than what you can get from other things that exist already? Hopefully the answer is yes. Because if the answer is no, well, you're probably not going to have a successful product. If the answer is yes, there is something new. Okay, wonderful. How can you focus on that concept while still making sure that you pay attention to the past of all of the TCGs that's come and gone? And I've said this to a couple people, but you know, we have a graveyard of TCGs to look at, of things that didn't work. And we would be foolish to not pay attention to some of those things so we can avoid the same mistakes. And for someone that's making a new TCG, Altered has an incredible team. We have over 30 employees in our studio. I'm one of the newer ones. I've only been here a few months. I think there's only one person that's newer than me. And it's a lot of people that are very passionate about the product, that have a lot of experience in the TCG realm. And I can promise you, in our 30 person studio, the awareness of saying we don't want to repeat mistakes that other games have done that have kind of caused their demise or caused them to, you know, kind of slowly wither away. That's important. Like, that's important to look at. We're pretty deep as far as this specific genre in this hobby. You have the very first one still going strong. Magic's, you know, 31 years this year, which is incredible. They've made a ton of amazing innovations. They've made a ton of mistakes. They've survived, but a lot of other games have not. Find out about this. Why was that the case? Why did this game not survive? Why is this other game doing well? Those are the things that you need to know, because I mean, education, especially in the, you know, for better or worse, most of the history of all of these games are in the internet era. So you can probably find out the questions to most of the things that you were seeking. But be humble, ask questions, find out what is your game going to be doing differently. It doesn't have to be just gameplay, but what is your game doing differently, and why is that attractive to people, and how can you make that work while avoiding the pitfalls of those that came before you?
Right. And I'm sure, like you said, your team, you know, y'all's team of 30 plus have, you know, asked yourselves that question. But I guess now's a perfect time for, you know, you to kind of go through why you think Altered kind of fits that bill. If you can talk a little bit about the game and, you know, for those who may not be familiar or those who are familiar, maybe you've already backed it, but you know, it's currently on Kickstarter at the moment. I think as of the recording of this podcast, there's about 10 days left.
Yeah, let's see, I got it pulled up right here. I've been responding to comments, myself and the rest of the marketing team. We have 10 days left. In American dollars, we're at 3.2 million,
right, which is incredible, right? And if I'm not mistaken, yeah. I think the only campaign that did more than that was Sorcery.
Yeah. 3.567. Not that I have that memorized for any reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, not that I'm, you know, paying attention. But yeah, no, let's, you right. know.
We still got a long way to go. We still got to go to course, get there, but hopefully.
Of course. And, you know, I was following this project before it hit Kickstarter. You know, I saw some of the marketing materials and things like that. And I, you know, as soon as I saw it, I knew there was going to be something special about it. But, you know, from someone who's actively working on the project, you know, can you kind of go through what Altered is, what is special about it, and what makes it something that people should care about?
All right. So I'm going to try to truncate my answer, because obviously I could talk about this answer for another 20 minutes. So I will try to not do that for your listener's sake. But Altered is, it's something that I obviously believe is going to be very special. You know, I've been working with Magic for the last 11 years. I worked, you know, Star City Games for 10 years. I contracted with Wizards of the Coast for the, you know, 12 months leading up to me being, you know, taken on at Equinox. So I think it's something special, which is why I'm kind of leaving the very warm and consistent arms of Magic to try something brand new. But Altered is a TCG that I believe has a very wide appeal for a huge swath of people. I think that this is something that is going, this game is going to be something that speaks to casual players that might be just wanting to engage with playing this game, you know, at their home with their friends, which is, you know, as we talked about in the very beginning, that's the largest portion of this market, right? It's a game that is non-combative. You are not, for lack of a better term, trying to punch your opponent in the face until they lose all of their hit points. You're basically trying to win a race to meet, have two of your characters meet on one space. So it's non-combative. It's very bright. The art is absolutely incredible, which I think just about anyone that has seen, can attest to. And those are some things that I think are excellent draws to the more casual crowd. But if you want to look on the competitive side, cause I'm a competitive gamer. I mean, I have been my entire life. So I'm in the tournament going crowd. I think Altered is an incredibly deep strategic game in a way that is not fully obvious until you start playing. It took me probably about a half dozen games to figure out, even just from the rules, but just playing and figuring out like all of the different things that were going on that could kind of like unlocked different portions of the game, like as I play every time I played. So I think it has huge potential to be something that is a major player in the competitive TCG market because, man, the gameplay is so deep and so decision laden, but not in a way that is intimidating to new players. You know, when I first played this game, I played with my partner. She loves board games, but she does not like TCGs at all. That's just not her jam. But she loved Altered. And I've now taught this game to, you know, another dozen people. A lot of those people are not TCG fans, and they were all like, this is really cool. This is something I actually want to play. And that was one of the things when I was coming on board with Equinox. I'm like, okay, there's something here. Like this is a group of people that is not into TCGs that just said, I really want to play that game, and it's a TCG. Me looking at it from a competitive standpoint, I know all of the stuff is there for that. And then now seeing through the eyes of so many others that it's so attractive and so exciting to the casual crowd. I mean, those are the two groups. And if you can speak to both of those, I think that you can be very successful. Altered is doing a lot of different things. I don't know how much time we had to get into it, but it is a physical card game that has some digital aspects. If you look at a card I got right here, I'll show you. They have QR codes on them, as you can see. A lot of people are like, that's an eyesore. Okay, it's not traditional. I'll give you that. I will also say that almost everyone forgets about them after playing a couple of games. They just kind of fade into the background. But either way, I get it. That's not necessarily a selling point. But the selling point is what that unlocks, which is completely, in my opinion, the thing that's going to kind of change the industry. If we can pull off all of the things that we believe that we will, which again, I believe that we will. And that is all of the digital aspects to Altered. So the QR code on each of the cards allows you to scan it to add it to your digital collection. So what happens when you add it to your digital collection? Well, a number of things. One is, going back to the initial discussion, for organized play, whenever you play in an official Altered event, you'll be able to simply register your deck list through the app, because all of organized play is going to be available through our app, using the deck list that you have made and it will match one to one. There will never be, we will not have situations where you are submitting an illegal deck list for anything, and you're able to do so with all of the cards that you own digitally on your account. So that's one. Two, you're able to easily buy, sell, trade with other players on our app using our marketplace. And you're probably saying, okay, well, that's not any different from TCG Player, where the most transactions for any, you know, card games are happening in North America. You're right. However, the portion where you need to physically make the purchase digitally and then have the card shipped to you, that doesn't necessarily have to remain, because the third very cool and interesting and kind of mind-blowing thing is we allow cards to be printed on demand if you own the digital rights to the card. So for example, if I own this card, I can print this card from our official factory. We're partnered with Cardamundi, which, you know, people in the TCG industry know of, but if maybe if you're not familiar, they print all of Magic the Gathering, they print all of Flesh and Blood, a number of other games. You can select any number of your cards to be printed on demand, submit an order, and it will be printed at a Cardamundi factory and shipped directly to your doorstep. So if you're a casual player that doesn't want to engage in official organized play as much, this game will be extremely accessible for you to get into, because the physical cardboard will be very easy to find and unlikely to be expensive to acquire. If you are wanting to engage at a higher level and play in a lot of tournaments, you can buy and sell on that app very easily and then not have to worry about the physical logistics of shipping cards to and from another person. You can simply just have them printed. Stores also can do the same thing. And they obviously, from a business perspective, they can opt to have kind of two fronts for things that they're selling. They could sell their physical card inventory to people that are not interested in using those specific cards in events. They could sell their digital card inventory just as they do now, as the vast majority of like kind of singles, you know, as we call them, singles transactions are pretty much all digital as the base. So should be something that's very attractive for retailers, for an opportunity for them to operate on both fronts, where they can manage their inventory easier, manage all of their purchases easier, and be able to sell any number of physical cards that they can manage their own inventory, because they can simply just print more and then sell those in their physical storefront. So we're doing a lot of things that are ambitious. And I know that a lot of people, and this is understandable, a lot of people need to see it happen before they're like, yeah, I believe in this project. And that's fine. We are not here saying absolutely under no circumstance just believe exactly what we're saying. We want to show you. And the game launches August 26th. If you're not a believer yet, no problem. That's fine. Just wait a little bit and come back and see us in 6 months, and then we'll be able to show you. Once the game is launched and we're successful and you see how all of these things work, you can jump on then. But if you do it right now, and I don't know when this podcast is going to release, but I would hate for you to miss out on all of the excellent Kickstarter rewards for not being kind of an early adopter. So that is my quick pitch. I think it was under 20 minutes, probably a little over a minute.
Yeah, no, it's perfect, because this is definitely a game that, I mean, a lot of people are interested in if you just visit the Kickstarter page. This episode will probably be up, you know, within a day, I would imagine, like maybe tomorrow or the next day. So if you're hearing this when it first comes out, your campaign will probably still be live. Like many other people, you're probably doing late pledges and things like that.
We're actually not, because the game is launching in August and we are trying to get the Kickstarter product into the hands of the people that purchased it by the end of July. So this is going to the printer immediately after the campaign ends.
All right. Well, so if you're hearing this,
it's ending on February 29th, period, yeah. No matter what.
All right. Well, I mean, hey, sense of urgency. I like it. Yeah. Well, if you're hearing it, get on, you know, let's hop on. I think at this,
you got about a week.
Yeah. And I think what does kind of speak volumes to what makes this project special is not the amount that's raised, but the amount of backers. I think about 8,500 It is 8,500 I don't know why I say it like that. 8,500 backers.
Right.
So far in the campaign, and that really speaks volumes to the people who are interested in this product. You know, your average buy-in price is very consumer level and not like this big bloated figure. And you're going to have, it just speaks volumes to the community that's going to be accessible to the game. So very excited for this project. You know, before we hop off here, is there a way for people to kind of contact you about it, about Altered? You know, where can people go to visit to learn more about the game? And do you have any other resources regarding the project?
Absolutely. So our homepage is altered.gg. That's where you can make an account to get you access to everything on the website, which includes all of the cards that we revealed, a truly crazy amount of lore that our narrative designer has written. He said somewhere between Lord of the Rings and Dune is the amount of words that he's written for the game. Oh, and it's true. Scarily, it's true. But that is our website. Go over there and make an account right now. A couple of other things. The Discord, our official Discord server, that is where the community right now is most active, as well as people that are, you know, within Equinox. We're in there frequently answering questions, chatting with everyone. I'm trying to convert people to Yzmir, which is my favorite faction.
Of course.
So that's like an ongoing process. It's not difficult. We're the best faction. So, you know, some people, it takes some time for them to see the light. So I understand. So the Discord, personally, I am most active on Twitter, which is my handles at jparnell1 on Twitter. And these days I am pretty much only talking about Altered. So if you're interested in Altered, then that is the place to go. I think I'm, well, probably the largest English speaking person that talks about it on a regular basis. And let's see. Oh, Board Game Arena. So Board Game Arena, we have our starter decks, which you are able to play if you've not played Altered, which is just boardgamearena.com. You can make a free account and try any of our starter decks against people whenever you want. Have you, Jay, had a chance to play Altered yet?
No. I've looked extensively in the game. I've read the rules. I've looked at tutorial videos, but I have not had a chance to actually play the game yet.
Okay. Well, you need to go over to Board Game Arena.
Well, thanks. Play. I'll do that. Yeah. No, that's exciting. That's absolutely exciting. And I've seen that y'all have 6 starter decks as well as the, you know, the pack products and things like that. So, well, Justin, this has been a wealth of information. I'm very excited. I'm sure a lot of other people are excited. And, you know, this is definitely a project that is one of those special ones that comes along, you know, every now and then that I think does really make waves and makes, you know, really good changes in the industry. So once again, Justin, thank you for being on here talking about organized play. And, you know, I wish you luck. You guys are already doing just fine, but I wish you all the luck in the world with this project.
Thank you so much. You know, we feel good about where we are right now, but we can always use more luck. So I appreciate it, Jay. And thank you for having me on so much. I enjoyed our chat. So, you know, if you ever want me back, just let me know.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks. All right. So that was Justin Parnell, who is the organized play manager for North America for Equinox, who is the developer of Altered TCG, which is still live on Kickstarter as of the time of this podcast releasing. And as Justin said in the video, there won't be any elite pledges or anything like that. So if you do want to hop on and support the game now and get it early and really, you know, get going with Altered, now's the time to do it. So, but we had a lot of good conversation about organized play. As Justin mentioned, there is a lot of, it's a big spectrum from, you know, casual events to highly competitive events. But more importantly, talking about the benefit that organized play can bring to a game, and knowing that it doesn't have to be this, very daunting task of, these big high energy, high level tournaments. It could simply just be something that you try and foster within a local community to get people to play the game, to get local stores to, you know, put events together and things like that. So a lot of good information there. So if you like what we talked about today about organized play and just kind of that aspect of TCGs and want to kind of follow more about, you know, other aspects of TCG design, production, operations, things like that. Feel free to follow this podcast, follow this series. You can also reach out to me. My email is j@theboosterpacknetwork.com. Our social media handles are @TBPNcontent. And I'm always open for suggestions on what topics to cover for TCGs. I know it's a niche space, but it does a lot of this information is related to the tabletop game space in general. And like with Altered, there's just a lot of exciting projects out there that, we have yet to know about and yet to be discovered. So really excited about what's coming up, not only for this project, but for everything else. So like I said, if you wanted to ask me any questions, you can email me. You can get to us at our social media handles. But as always, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.